In Daniel, it says that he will blaspheme against the Most High. In Revelation, it says that he will speak blasphemies. So, you know, he will take the Lord's name and speak evil against God. He will, and right here, when I greet everybody, what do I say? I say saints of the Most High, right? Saints of El Elyon. That's what I call you guys. Saints of El Elyon, God, the Most High God. Well, what will the Antichrist do? He will blaspheme El Elyon. He will blaspheme the Most High.
Welcome to Anchored in Jesus, the teaching ministry of Dr. William R. Glaze, founder of the Pittsburgh Institute of Biblical Studies, author, and senior pastor of Bethany Baptist Church. This is Sonia Hall, thanking you for joining us today for the conclusion of the Antichrist Part 3. So let's join Dr. Glaze for the conclusion of the Antichrist Part 2.
If everybody's speaking the same thing, everybody's working on the same thing. So, you know, the financial preparation has already been laid for the Antichrist to come and to take over. Now, let me share something else with you before I move on. Again, one of the programs that I was watching, you know, the guy right here, we're in Revelation 13, where right here it talks about, and he had power to give life unto the image of the beast, that the image should both speak and cause that as many as would not worship the image of the beast should be killed. This guy on his program was talking about in Phoenix, Arizona, that there's a 10-story high image that they're bringing to the city. And the image, you know, is animated and can talk and can move and all those type things. So, you know, again, when we think about the stage being set, you know, the more advanced we get in technology, and you know, keep in mind now, saints, keep this in mind, that when John said all this, he had no idea of all the technology that would be in place. John had no idea, but he wrote that image of the beast would be constructed, and that, look at this, life would be given to this image, and that people would worship the image. And so, you know, we see, like I said, in Phoenix, Arizona, that, you know, there's a 10-story image that they're going to bring, an animated image, and give life to it. So, you know, again, preparation for the coming of the Antichrist. The stage has been set. Financial preparation, technological preparation. You know, we looked at a couple weeks ago. Facial recognition in China, that you can go into the airport and you don't need an ID. That, you know, they have facial recognition, medical information on the chips. Now, you know what? You know something that's very interesting. And again, this program that I was watching, they were talking about prophecy. And one of the things that they said is that there's a shortage of chips for cars and trucks. And that if you look, you know, in certain places on lots, there's trucks that they can't sell them right now because they don't have a chip for them. Wow. Wow. You know, and if you look at cars, try to buy a car today. I'm so glad that I don't have to buy a car today. Try to buy one today. Now, if you try to sell one, you might be in good shape because you will get top dollar for your car if you try to sell it. But then don't turn around and try to buy one because, you know, it's skyrocketing. But I thought that was interesting, you know, the chips that there's trucks that are actually sitting on the lot that they can't move because they ran out of chips. They don't have chips for them. The tracking GPS to track your location, email, text, phone monitoring, cameras, the ability to listen to phones when they are turned off. You know, technology is in place, you know, for the Antichrist. Now, here's one right here, ecclesiastical preparation. Let me just read this right here. And this is, I've taken this from my book. I wrote a commentary on the book of Revelation. And so this is from my commentary on the book of Revelation. In Revelation 17:1, we are introduced to a harlot who sits upon many waters. All right. So who is this harlot? If you go read Revelation 17, the harlot represents the adulterous religious system. So the harlot represents a religious system. Now notice that she sits on many waters in Revelation 17:1. She sits on many waters. What did this symbolize? This symbolizes her universal influence, that this harlot, you know, sits on many waters and will represent religion, a religious system that will have worldwide influence. In verse 2, we see the kings of the earth committed fornication with her and were drunk with the wine of her fornication. This means that, watch this now, saints, this means they will become intoxicated with this religious system. And we see the harlot sitting on a scarlet-colored beast and was full of blasphemies, having seven heads and 10 horns. All right, now notice this. The harlot was what? Was sitting on a beast with seven heads and 10 horns. Where did we see that at already? Revelation 13. And who is that? The Antichrist. You see where I'm going with this. You see where I'm going with this. That means that the religious system, this harlot who represents a universal religious system, will sit on the beast. That means that the harlot and the beast, the false system of religion and the Antichrist, will be in bed together. Oh man, that they will be in some type of religious alliance. Think about that. The stage is being set. Look at the push for a one world religion. Have you ever seen a day and time when Christians, Muslims, and Jews are trying to come together and work together? Now, I have no problem with us working together to end world hunger or to end abuse in the world or to end trafficking. I have no problem with people coming together to do that. But we are coming together for, if you think, religious purposes, right? And what are the three main religions? The three main religions are all related to who? Abraham, right? Christians, you know, who is the forefather? Is Abraham. Jews, who is the forefather? Abraham. Muslims, who is the forefather? Abraham. Abraham is the father of all those, right? And so there's a push to unite the religions of the world into one, you know, one world system, one world government. Just go back and read Revelation 17, the harlot, who represents false religion, rides on the beast. Now, you know, the interesting thing, I don't know if I said it here, the interesting thing is this, is that if we go on and read Revelation 17, that the beast turns on the harlot, right? And begins to persecute the harlot. So after the Antichrist uses the world false religious system, then what is the Antichrist going to do? It's going to turn on him, right? So it will use the false religious system to promote his cause, the Antichrist will. And then at some point, when the Antichrist is finished with the false religious system, then he's going to turn on it. and he's going to begin to persecute the church or the false church. And so, saints, we see that the preparation is being laid for the coming of the Antichrist. Financial preparation is being laid. Technological preparation is being made, and ecclesiastical preparation is being made. All right. So that's the preparation. We already looked at this. Now, when you get this now, saints, when I send this to you, you need to go back and study this page right here. Because the Antichrist in Israel, that is one of the keys. So, you know, how do we know, you know, when you talk about how do we know that, the signs are coming to, showing that things are coming, getting close. Now, again, I'm not going to say that the rapture is going to take place today, next week, next year. I'm just telling you it's getting close. And one of the ways that we know is because the Antichrist makes a covenant with Israel. Well, do you know, up until 1948, if the Antichrist came on the scene, he couldn't make a covenant with Israel. Why? Because Israel was not a nation. All right. Israel was not a nation. In 1948, they became a nation again. All right. So that if you want to look at one sign that shows that we're coming close to the sign is Israel become a nation. That's one that you definitely that should cause our ears to perk up. When we think about what I told you either last week or the week before, and that is, now there's no temple, right? There's no temple, but the people of Israel are doing what? They're training men for temple service. They've already implemented the table of showbread, the altar of incense, the lampstand. They've already put those are ready to go. Some people believe that they know where the Ark of the Covenant is. Now, I don't know about that, but there are some people that will tell you that they're just waiting for the temple to rebuild, and then they're going to pull, they're going to locate the Ark of the Covenant. Priestly garments. They have manufactured priestly garments. And then the harps, they already got the harps for playing in the temple. All right. So, these are things that let us know that the end is near. Similarities between Antiochus Epiphanes and Antichrist. Now, again, we talk about Antiochus. He was the one that offered the pig on the altar back in the intertestamental period. And Jesus said he said the abomination desolation. Jesus talked about that in Matthew 24, the abomination desolation. And he referred back to that. But when he referred back to it, he was also talking about the Antichrist that would come. And so we see some similarities between Antiochus and the Antichrist. They were conquerors, self-exaltation, deceptive appearance. They come with an appearance of peace. They persecute Israel. They defile the temple. And they both are empowered by Satan. So, we see that comparison there. Okay, let's look at this. And I don't know how far I'm going to get on this today. But again, next week I'm definitely going to cover the mark of the beast. I'm going to cover that. The mark of the beast and 666. What is that? It's interesting that every time you see movies, right? It talks about when 666, that it always represents something evil. All right. So, we want to, as believers, we should know what 666 means. All right. So we're going to talk about that next week. The character of the Antichrist. Let's look at his character. He is extremely evil, right? He is identified as vile. He has a king. He's a king with a heart to do mischief. He's a man of sin. He's the son of perdition, damnation, destruction, and he's the wicked one. So this guy is going to be extremely evil. Now, along with that comes the fact that he will be deceptive. He deceives the unrighteousness. And now remember, And he's like Christ, or he's going to try to be like Christ. Now we remember Jesus, he was crucified on a cross. Jesus was buried, and Jesus rose again. All right, that's the power of the resurrection when we look at Christ. Well, the Antichrist, Revelation 13:3, says that he's going to receive a deadly wound. A deadly wound, and then he will be healed from that wound. And many people believe that he will either fake his death, because we know that Satan can't give life, so he will fake his death, or you know, he will deceive people into think that he's dead, right? So he will deceive the world by making people think that he died, right? And then he's going to come back to life. And so when he does that, you know, what's the first thing that people want to say? Oh, he must be the Messiah, right? And if you look at, everybody is looking for who? Everybody is looking for just the Jews. Who are they looking for? They're looking for Messiah, right? They're looking for the Muslims. Who are they looking for? They're looking for the return of their Messiah, right? So everybody's looking for a Messiah. And so when this guy shows up and he receives this deadly wound, and then he becomes healed, then people are gonna say, he must be the Messiah. He must be the one that that was sent. So, you know, again, when we look at this right here, he is extremely evil, but yet and still, what does he do? He covers up his evil by being deceptive. And so, you know, he will even present a outward appearance of peace, right? But he's evil. You know, he's presenting peace because he has nefarious purposes in mind. So that's why he's presenting peace. And again, the Jewish people will swallow it up, because probably what's one of the things that he's going to let them do? He's going to let them go and rebuild the temple, and he's going to let them resume their worship. So they're going to fall in love with him because, you know, of what he lets them do, right? But he's evil. His purpose is for doing that is evil, and he's deceptive. So he's going to deceive. 2 Thessalonians 2:10 says that he's going to deceive the unrighteous, and then he's going to deceive the whole world about his false resurrection. He is intelligent. The little horn in Daniel has eyes like a man. This represents his intelligence and ability to observe. So, you know, just think about when he does something, you know, when he does a military strike, or when he orders this to happen or that to happen, it's all going to work out, because he's, you know, he's extremely intelligent. You know, he's going to know exactly what to do, how to do it, and it's going to work out, right? Because he's intelligent, all right? And then I found this interesting. Daniel says that he has no desire for women, right? He has no desire for women. What in the world does that mean? He has no desire for women. Well, I'm not exactly sure what it means, but you know, there are several theories regarding the meaning of this phrase. Some people say that he will not be attracted to women, which means that, you know, he'll be homosexual. Some people say he will not have the affection of women, and you know, that means, you know, there will not be any gentleness. You know, he'll just be brutal, right? He'll be brutal. And then some says he will not be concerned with the things women care about. All right, so you know, he just have no regard for, you know, the things that women care about. So I don't know. I mean, when I first started studying Bible prophecy, I thought this meant that he was going to be homosexual. you know, he will not be attracted to women. But as you study it out, you know, there is the possibility that it could mean something else. All right. So let me hit this one more point, and then I'm going to take questions if there are any. You know, hopefully I taught the lesson in such a way that you understood it. If not, somebody said, if people don't ask questions, that means that you just thoroughly confuse them and they don't know what questions to ask. So I pray that I haven't confused you today. Let's look at, and I'm going to close with this, the work of the Antichrist. All right. The work of the Antichrist. And again, this is in my book on commentary on the book of Revelation. He will come to power through peace. And I saw and behold a white horse, and he that sat on him had a bow, and a crown was given unto him, and he went forth conquering and to conquer. Now notice this. All right, now saints, tell me if this makes sense. The Antichrist has a bow with no arrows. Now, what good is a bow with no arrows, right? You can be out hunting all day long and you're not going to get anything if you just got a bow, right? You need arrows. So the fact that the bow with no arrows, this means that he will conquer without war, right? That he'll have the bow, which means he's going to conquer, but he's not going to have any arrows, which means that it's not going to be a war. He will establish a world government without warfare. Man, when you look at how governments are established today, you know, generally there's a war. I don't know how many, there's hundreds of wars that's going on all over the world right now. Hundreds of wars, right? And just think, this guy's gonna show up and he's gonna conquer without any warfare, right? He will not triumph with military power, but with lying deceptions. So again, he's gonna make that covenant with Israel, that false peace. So the Antichrist, he will come and he will conquer through peace, right? He's not going to lift a finger of war, right? He's going to come into existence. He's going to come into power. His kingdom is going to come to rise. Now, once he gets in, right? Once he gets in, he's going to be brutal, right? That's when he's going to turn, and he's going to begin to persecute, and he's going to begin to make war. All right. But as he comes to conquest, as he rises to power, he's going to do that without warfare, all right? But again, once he gets in there, then that's when, to use the old expression, all hell is going to break loose. All right, let me see. I'll finish up with this one right here. He will head up a 10-nation confederacy. He has 10 horns. Remember in Revelation 13 and even in Daniel, he has 10 horns, which symbolizes he will be the head of a 10-nation kingdom. During the tribulation, many prophecy scholars believe that the old Roman Empire will be revived under the control of the Antichrist. So when he comes, he's going to head up a 10-nation confederacy.
Thank you for joining us today on Anchored in Jesus. Tune in next time for the first half of The Antichrist Part 4. If you would like to request an audio copy of today's message, The Antichrist Part 3, you can contact us at anchoredinjesus.org and request The Antichrist Part 3. That's anchoredinjesus.org and request The Antichrist Part 3 from our series on prophecy. Or call us at 877-831-5060. Keep in mind, the entire series on prophecy is made available by request. When you visit our website, anchoredinjesus.org, you can view many of the other teachings by Dr. Galais. Dr. Galais is the author of 10 books. For more information about these resources and how to order, visit anchoredinjesus.org or call 877-831-5060. We also invite you to like us on Facebook at Anchored in Jesus Ministries. If you would like to make a financial contribution, please visit our website, anchoredinjesus.org, or send it to Anchored in Jesus at P.O. Box 24034, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania 15206. Once again, that website is anchoredinjesus.org, or you can send your financial contribution to Anchored in Jesus at P.O. Box 24034, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania 15206. It's through your prayers and gifts remain on the air. Our title, Anchored in Jesus, comes from Hebrews chapter 6, verse 19, which lets us know that Jesus is our high priest and an anchor for the soul. For Dr. Glaze and our volunteer staff, I'm Sonia Hall reminding you, you don't have to be tossed in the storms of life. Your soul can be anchored in the Lord.